personified, and I will drag you down and sell you out. Run away. I am cold like December snow.
Tom Brady is mad because Gisele Bündchen already has a new boyfriend. They're freshly divorced, and she's already out with a new guy. Did Brady really think a woman like that was going to sit home? That motor can't idle. You don't want it parked in the garage. Am I subconsciously invoking the Ted Nugent song Wango Tango? If I am, I'm proud of that. Pretend your face is a Maserati. It's a Maserati. It's a Maserati. Gisele got some jiu-jitsu instructor. I bet he's flexible. A submission specialist, baby. Brady shouldn't be mad. Brady chose football. Brady's played 23 years so far, and it wasn't enough. Brady won 7 rings so far, and it wasn't enough. Brady has made $332 million so far just for football, and it wasn't enough. Brady chose football, so he has no right to be mad about what Gisele does. If she wants to bang the jiu-jitsu guy in the octagon on national TV or date the surviving members of Van Halen, it's not Brady's business. Brady chose football. Brady can't be mad. So, hey, Tom Brady, if you're mad, guess what?
You just made the list.
The list brought to us by Armstrong Comfort Solutions and by Matt Mertz Plumbing. I wish Tom Brady was listening right now. I would remind him, Tom, right now Gisele is being pounded by that jiu-jitsu instructor. Every submission hold in the book, the octopus, everything, it's being combined with the Kama Sutra as he pleasures her in ways she never experienced with some hick from San Mateo, California. He is pounding her like chopped beef, like veal parm, like chicken arrabbiata, like whatever else gets pounded really hard. He's pounding her. And all your rings won't give her that pleasure. All your money won't give her that pleasure either, because she's got more. Tom Brady's mad about that. Give me a friggin' break. Although I think God wanted Gisele to be violated by a jiu-jitsu instructor in full view of Tom Brady and make him mad. It wouldn't happen if God didn't want it to. I think we can agree on that, because God micromanages the lives of us all, and none of us are responsible for anything we do. It's all in God's hands. And I know people who say that seriously and mean it, and it is utterly ridiculous. If that makes me a bad person, then, well, heck, I'm probably a bad person for more reasons than that. Let's go to Danny Dimes on the south side. Danny Dimes, you're on 105.9.
Hey, what's up, Mark? I want to talk Jeff Saturday and a little bit Joe Thomas. First thing, if Jeff Saturday were black, we wouldn't be talking about this. Let's just be honest.
I don't know about that, but I think it makes the backlash... Yeah, I think it's fair to say it makes the backlash more pronounced. I think we see that when it's discussed on TV stations.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't make a big deal about when Chauncey Billups got hired. But I mean, he wasn't white.
So is that basketball?
Yeah.
I don't know too much about basketball. Tread lightly. I think you're getting slightly on the racist side of things, but go on.
I mean, kind of just facts. But the Joe Thomas part of it, he talks you need to have experience. I mean, he's never played a playoff game, so when the playoffs start, he can go home, and we can bring somebody else in.
Yeah, Joe Thomas criticized the hiring too, right?
Yeah, he said something, but I mean, he just...
I got to be honest, I don't pay any attention to what an offensive lineman says or a guy who never made a playoff game says, and he's both.
That's fair. Hey, you think Kenny Pickett throws a touchdown this week?
No. How about you?
Yeah, me neither.
Thank you for the call. Good finish. Yeah, I mean, I'm treading lightly, but, I mean, Jeff Saturday. Yeah, Jeff Saturday. Oh, screw it. I mean, the guy's right. If it was a black coach, it wouldn't be ripped at all. But then again, if it was a black coach, it would satisfy the intent of the Rooney Rule. And I do think minority candidates got passed over here to hire a guy with very little coaching experience at all. He was a losing high school coach. And I don't know. I mean, but by the same token, why can't Irsay hire who he wants? That is always the big argument against the Rooney Rule, that it's a sham that just encourages unnecessary interviews, which is what Brian Flores' lawsuit is at least partially about. And I got to admit, while I have trouble with minority candidates not getting a chance in the NFL as head coaches, as coordinators, as general managers, while I have a big problem with that, I also have a problem with telling people what their hiring should be with things they own. I mean, why should you tell me who I can and can't hire? You know, that there's two sides to this, and people pretend there's not, but there are. That said, I think it was a terrible hire on a lot of levels. I think he's not a qualified coach. I do think it ignored minority candidates. I think it ignored the Indianapolis Colts' current staff. McAfee loves it. I know that. He's a big Jeff Saturday hype guy. Then again, that's kind of what Pat is, a hype guy. That's his biggest attribute, and he's really good at it. 412-333-WXDX is the number to call. Why can't we talk hockey? I like hockey. I like the fact that the Leafs, I mean, never mind that they haven't won a playoff series since 2000, haven't won a Stanley Cup since 1967, which everybody talks about. They haven't won a playoff series since 2003. And they haven't won a playoff series, you know, in the past how many years, even despite having a good team, an incarnation that merits better. But then again, they keep running into, well, like last year, like Tampa Bay in the first round. Like the Leafs, because they don't win playoff series, they have to be concerned about who they play in the first round. The Lightning doesn't. They just don't care. Let's go to Mike in the car. Mike, you're on with Double M.
Hey, Mark. I think I agree, you know, with the previous caller had mentioned as far as, you know, if he were black, we probably wouldn't have a discussion. But I think the big word there is if. And, you know, he wasn't black.
That's
right. White.
That's exactly right. And again, I think minority candidates got not even passed over because you don't have to observe the Rooney Rule in an interim hire. They just got ignored. And again, I hope this isn't a trend where owners figure, okay, I can sidestep the Rooney Rule by making the guy I want to hire long-term the guy I hire in the interim. And then if he does okay, I just keep him. Heck, even if he doesn't do okay, I just keep him.
That's true. I think, though, you're also going to limit your selections, you know, if you do. I mean, that's a pretty big plan to hatch going into the season with the intention of potentially getting rid of a coach to circumvent the rule. Not saying it won't happen, but, you know, that'd be a pretty big stretch, I feel.
Thank you for the call. Yeah, there's a big pushback on Twitter regarding cancellation about why isn't Howard Stern canceled? I mean, the guy performed in blackface. He said the N-word more than any media figure I can think of and gotten away with it. He has Robin Quivers there to justify his misogyny and his racism. And, okay, now maybe he's changed. At least he says he has. But don't people get canceled all the time for things they did 20 years ago? Like I said, the whole cancel culture thing, it's not based on what you say. It's based on who you are and were you liked by the right people, by the woke crowd in the first place. It's just like Joy Behar. She made that homophobic joke when Carl Nassib came out as a gay player in football, like, what was it, penetration in the end zone, something cringy like that, and nothing happened to her because she was just trying to be funny. You know, the cancel thing, the woke crowd, it's ridiculous. And I'll tell you what, I've tried to see the left side of it, and every time I do, they just push me back right. They just push me back right. They've become what they accuse the right of being, which means everybody sucks. And now it's time to ask Mark anything. That was quite a segue. 412-333-WXDX. Ask Mark anything right now by dialing 412-333-WXDX. And after that, we have the Hockey Night Show on 105.9.
And now, the super genius, Mark Madden.
Come, son of Jor-El! Kneel before Zod!
Oh, hi.
Always great to hear from the lady callers.
DX at 105.9.
I'm not to ask Mark anything. We got Jesse Marshall of The Athletic talking hockey at 5:30 for the Hockey Night Show. Penguins host Toronto tonight. This has been kind of a dead show. I've been really pleased with the way the shows have gone lately. I'm not too crazy about today. You want me to say Pickett's good? I won't. So if that means none of you listen, none of you call, Pickett stinks so far. Live with it. But now it's time to ask Mark anything, brought to us by Penn West University, harnessing the strengths of three legacy institutions. That's Penn West University. I'll tell you one thing that does get me mad. When people say me criticizing Pickett is shtick. It's not shtick. It's stats. It's not shtick. It's facts. It's not shtick. It's failure. It's not shtick. It's the video. He's terrible so far. Let's go to Soup at Imperial Soup. You're on with Double M.
Hey, Mark. Big fan. I wanted to call. God told me to ask what you think of my Islanders this year. Do you think they're a real threat?
I think they're a more wide-open team with Lane Lambert coaching. Not that he's a real offensive guru, but they were just so stifled under Barry Trotz that I think anything, you know, looks more high-octane with anybody else in charge. I think the big factor there, though, is the goaltending. I think Ilya Sorokin has a chance to be that next great goaltender, specifically that next great Russian goaltender. And I think if he keeps playing like he has, that gives them a shot at making the playoffs anyway. I mean, what do you see besides Sorokin that makes them a threat?
I enjoy that Barzal this year is being more, you know, moving the puck. He's shooting more and he's passing more than last year. He was just skating circles around everybody and then stopping.
Well, I think he was stifled. I think he was stifled by the coaching style with Trotz. But bro, you know he doesn't have a goal yet. He has no goals in 17 games. He has 18 assists.
Yeah, that's true, but
and no goals, and that's unacceptable considering the big ticket he just signed, especially. That's utterly unacceptable.
True. That is true, but it is also nice to see Lee back from his injury at, like, full strength for a full year.
Anders Lee is a winning hockey player. He's a more important player than Matthew Barzal to that team.
You got that right. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, and thank God for telling you to call. Let's go to Sean on the road. Sean, you're on with Double M.
Hey, Mark, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, Mark, I just wanted to see what your opinion is on the Rooney Rule.
I think it's a good rule in theory. I think minority candidates have to get more interviews and more jobs. But I don't think you could tell rich guys how to spend their money and who they have to hire. And B, I think the biggest impact of the Rooney Rule is a lot of sham interviews that are conducted for the sake of satisfying the Rooney Rule with minority candidates who don't have a chance of getting the job. It wastes a lot of time. I agree
100%.
Until you actually get minority hires, I mean, what good has the Rooney Rule done? And there's not nearly been enough minority hires. And I want minority hires. I just don't know how you affect it. I don't know how you make team owners hire who you want them to hire as opposed to who they want to hire.
I look at it as almost like a slap in the face. I mean, when they know who they want to hire before they do an interview.
Well,
it's not
a slap in the face. It's a good idea. It's just an impractical idea. The Rooney Rule is utterly impractical. That doesn't mean it's not a good idea or that, you know, everybody's hearts aren't in the right place, but it's impractical. It has no potency. And if you, what was discussed, that they would give draft picks or whatever it was, an extra draft pick to teams that made minority hires, that is going too far the other way, and it's utterly condescending to boot.
Bill Cowher says he's going to come out of retirement. The Steelers know they want him, and I'm a minority, and they're going to give me a token interview because they have to. I wouldn't even go. I wouldn't do it.
Well, again, that's, and thank you for the call. That's a big part of what the Brian Flores lawsuit is about, and I think Brian Flores is 100% in the right with that lawsuit. Let's go to Justin in Pittsburgh. Justin, ask Mark anything.
Hey, Mark, big fan. How are you?
Great.
Hey, you always talk about Penguins and your passion for them growing up as a kid,
yep.
You know, your mom and the hockey
yep.
cards, all that stuff. What taught you into Liverpool soccer?
I've answered that way too many times, but thank you for the call. Let's go to John outside the arena. John, you're on with Mark.
Mark, it's your old buddy John outside the arena.
Okay.
The usher. You talk to me all the time.
Oh, okay, John, how we doing? What's up? Real quick.
I'm good, brother. I'm good. What are your thoughts? The segment about snacks a few hours ago. What are your thoughts on Snyder's barbecue chips and your favorite Eddie Guerrero Ray match at WCW?
Oh, I don't remember a specific Eddie Guerrero Ray match, but everything they touched turned to gold. They were both brilliant. Eddie, the anniversary of his death was a few days ago, and Eddie and I were friends. So thank you for bringing up his memory. Snyder's barbecue chips, they're great. But again, my favorite chips are salt and vinegar or sour cream and onion and no fixed brand. Thank you. Up next, we talk hockey with Jesse Marshall here on 105.9.
And now, the super genius, Mark Madden.
Super genius, big fan.
You got to be a big timer to get on this show.
Double M, huge fan.
Raise the Jolly Rancher.
The X at 105.9.
Welcome to the Hockey Night Show, brought to you by Caliente Pizza. Always safe flagging and traffic control, and by Duncan. Joining me now to talk hockey, he covers the Penguins for The Athletic. He is Jesse Marshall. Jesse, what do you make of the goaltending situation? Does Smith getting a start tonight, his third in four games? Jari saying he's playing hurt, and he didn't play too good in Montreal, did he?
No, he didn't, Mark. And look, here's another thing. You know, I don't want to get into the injury piece, right, because we can't speculate on that. We don't know what the situation is. A lot of people, at the defense of Tristan Jari, Mark, have said the Penguins have been too volatile defensively. They're not playing super tight. All that's true. But we can parse that goaltending performance out analytically, Mark, and put a league average goaltender in Tristan Jari's position to discern that he has, in fact, been below the line. That's the bottom line, Mark. He's just been below the line. A league average goalie would put a better performance out in the Penguins' goaltending spot over Tristan Jari right now. And I think, personally, when you look at the situation, they need a save with him on the ice, Mark, right? There's times in the game where I don't care how many chances you've allowed, I don't care what the circumstances of the night are. You need a save, right? They have gotten those saves, not a ton of them, Mark, but they've gotten them from Casey DeSmith. They got him against Toronto in that win, and that's why he's got the net back. That's the bottom line. When things are rocky, when the seas are rough, when your D is scatterbrained and figuring it out, you got to have good goaltending. And you know, DeSmith's not setting the world on fire, Mark, but he's been significantly better than Tristan Jari is.
Yeah, I agree with that, at least to date. Jari, my worry's always been he's a stats goalie, like a goals against and a save percentage goalie, but doesn't steal games or win big ones. That said, Jesse, you don't think Sullivan would moot a transition to DeSmith as the number one goalie, do you? And if so, I just don't think that would work.
I don't think it would work either, but I think the plan, Mark, is if Tristan Jari is hurt, you want to put the least amount of load on him right now as you possibly can, and you want to at the same time strike while the iron is hot. And you know, if DeSmith is in the vibe right now and he's feeling it, so much of goaltending, Mark, is just voodoo. And who's feeling good this week? Who's got the hot hand? I think this is an opportunity for Mike Sullivan in the short term to cede the net to Casey DeSmith while Tristan Jari heals whatever this injury is, figures his game out, and gets his game back together. But to your point, I mean, you could make that look. If Casey DeSmith goes on a month-long run, Mark, and he's playing lights-out hockey, 920 save percentage, and got all the trappings of a starter, I mean, you could make that declaration. But if your intention is to get past the first round, how much have you really bolstered that by making that declaration? So, I mean, it's fatalist, right? It sounds terrible to say that, but that's the reality of the situation they're in. You know, your hope is that the goalie with more pedigree gets this thing figured out sooner rather than later.
Are the Penguins playing better? I thought they were until that third period in overtime at Montreal. They just kept blowing the lead, and that's a familiar tune when things are going poorly for them.
It is, and I agree with you. I've heard you say it on your show. They got to tighten it up, and I'm not saying you need to change the whole system. You don't have to throw out the recipe, but you need to make adjustments when you're playing with a lead. And the attack thing, that works in theory, but it only works when you're attacking work. And I think what this team does is they don't apply that same level of high-quality forecheck when they're up three or two goals as they do when the game's tied or they're down a goal. And this system, Mark, make no mistake about it, when it doesn't have that forecheck, it's vulnerable in just about every area of the ice. They are getting walked in the neutral zone. Their D are getting spun around like turnstiles. There's getting stretch passes working against them. Just trap, right? That's it. Just don't apply that forechecker at all, Mark. Bring them back into the neutral zone. Now let's rein them in 25 feet and start this process a little bit further back towards our zone.
Well, as you know, you're preaching to the choir. The only time we've really seen that was in game three of the series last year against the New York Rangers, and didn't see it after in that series, despite a lot of situations that dictated. I'm not worried yet that the Penguins won't make the playoffs, but I do see teams in the Metro Division that might be a bigger handful than anticipated. I'm sure you do too. Which of those teams does that description apply to?
The New Jersey Devils, Mark. I think they're the best team in the league right now. I did not stutter when I said that. They are just buzzsawing teams apart. They have four good quality lines right now that Lindy Ruff is using masterfully. You know what they're doing, Mark, is they're dumping pucks in the zone and they're attacking from the corner behind the net, which is just such an old school Lindy Ruff thing to do. When you look at all these players, they have Nico Hischier, Hughes, they're laden with talent, but I think the system that they were traditionally playing really wasn't necessarily tuned to that roster. And now you see them getting these pucks deep, working from behind the net and generating, statistically, Mark, more high quality chances than anybody in the National Hockey League.
Jesse, it's amazing. So, I never thought I'd see the day when those uniforms would play entertaining hockey.
Really, our entire lives, I know for me especially, Mark, you know, born in the early 80s, we watched them kill the game, literally, single-handedly in the 90s with a two-line pass. You know, that Eastern Conference final in five games was one of the worst series I've ever seen in my entire life in Penguins. So, yeah, it's a total antithesis of what we've come to expect from New Jersey. But, hey, I'll be honest with you, Mark. You know, there's some questions maybe here or there around their goaltending and the longevity it can provide. But what they're doing at even strength, make no mistake, it'll be effective for them all year long.
Who else besides the Devils in the Metro do you think can provide a challenge to the playoffs, that a playoff berth that didn't make it last year?
I don't think it's going to be Philadelphia, Mark. I don't think
either.
That's going to last. I think that the Tortorella that whole thing is going to wear off real quick. And I think there's some members of the media that are already getting sick of that. The Islanders are in there. You take a look at what they've done, especially from a special team standing. I think they went for the first, 30 power play opportunities they had this year, Mark, without conceding a goal against from the penalty kill perspective. So they've been getting it done on the back of their special teams and some players playing well that they've been expecting to play well for quite some time. I go back to the lack of oomph that team has. They don't have Barry Trotz there anymore, right? That I wonder if that secret sauce is going to work throughout the year. But there's somebody that, for me anyway, is worth keeping an eye on, especially because anytime you're that good on the penalty kill, you negate a huge advantage for a lot of other teams. We've seen that team, Mark, get pucks deep and just grind people down to sleep. They're playing the same kind of hockey right now.
What can the Penguins do to make their power play better? And I know that's a badly cliched and worn-out discussion, Jesse, but the power play doesn't produce like it should. It doesn't gain momentum consistently like it should. And I think it's as simple as they don't really have a point guy. There's no reset point. Letang's not a point guy like a Gonchar. Kessel did that in the left circle because you can be a de facto point guy at the half wall, but I don't see anybody that the puck goes to that settles the power play down ever.
No, it's definitely not Crystal Tang, Mark. And that is a criticism of him. It's, I think he's needed to take that role over for this team and the position they've been in, and he hasn't done it. They're so reactionary with the man advantage, Mark. They're not proactive in virtually anything they do, from zone entry into when they have possession. And you see, you know, the trend in today's NHL, Mark, is power kill, is what they call it. Get forwards up on these penalty kill, on these power play units, make them uncomfortable, force them to turn the puck over. That's everybody now. You don't see like passive PKs that just protect their goalie anymore. And this setup that they run, right, with you want to have important one-time options on either side, with a little tang on the top, that's just conducive to getting bullied to the outside of the ice. They got to just scrap this thing, man, because at the end of the day, I think opposing teams, it's on film now that if you pressure them, they'll go to the perimeter and they just won't shoot. And I think I hate to be that guy up in the upper level below you in the press box yelling, shoot. But sometimes it's that simple, because you force the opposition to react. And the Penguins aren't doing that right now. They're not dictating the pace of the game when they have the power play. They're letting the penalty kill team do it to them. And whether that you change personnel or you change the system, something has to happen. Because, again, they're negating a huge advantage and have had really, Mark, lost games because the turkey's been on the table for them, proverbially speaking, and they haven't been able to take advantage of it.
Well, Jesse, my idea is to put Crosby at the right half wall as opposed to Don Lowe and let him quarterback from there. I know that kills Geno's one-timer, but the way the power play is now, how many times is he getting to take it anyway?
True, and, you know, when you're far out and taking shots from distance, Mark, you know, you're relying on deflections at best. I mean, these aren't situations where you're making the goalie move side to side. The shots that they're taking are static shots that everybody's got to look at. They don't have a good screen in front. I agree with you. I'd love to see them work the goal line more, just period. I don't think they go low to high enough. I don't think they draw that penalty kill in and get them out of position enough. You know, it's just, again, it's not proactive enough for me. And just in shooting, Mark, just in shooting from any position, you're forcing the penalty kill to make a move and to get out of position to go retrieve a loose puck. That's how you open things up sometimes. So I'm with you. I'd try anything at this point. I'd move personnel if I had to. It's just not working. I don't like that sort of umbrella setup that they have, Mark. It just makes you so vulnerable when you have guys playing patty cake up at the point. It's just turnover city up there, and we've seen that. So for me, it's the systems change.
To wrap up, Jesse, what do you expect from Matt Murray tonight? Because since he left the Penguins, really before he left the Penguins, his career arc has been going down, and I did not see that coming, let alone to expect it to last this long.
Not to this level, Mark. Me either. Not to this level. What we saw in those cup runs in Pittsburgh was very real, and how it's gotten so lost, you know, I'm not sure. But I don't expect – I mean, to be honest with you, I don't expect a ton. I think he's going to be emotionally invested in this one. But I also think the Penguins are going to make his life pretty hard. You know, he's not been getting a lot of goal support. The Leafs have struggled to score. And then, hey, at the end of the day, Mark, that glove is still a problem for him and was very early on in the season. So I continue to keep my eye on that. The Penguins know that better than anybody tonight, Mark. So I think you're going to be seeing them target that area quite frequently.
Jesse, great stuff. Good work at The Athletic. We'll talk again soon, I hope.
Appreciate it, Mark. Thank you.
That's Jesse Marshall from The Athletic. This is the Hockey Night Show, brought to you by Caliente Pizza and Draft House. Always safe flagging and traffic control. And by Dunkin'. Pittsburgh runs on Dunkin'. I do a twice-weekly podcast, the Mark Madden podcast, for the Bet Rivers Podcast Network. And up next, I got a little excerpt about players in hockey who play a lot of minutes. It started as a top three list, but it went to top four. That's just around the corner here on the Hockey Night Show. On the home of the Penguins, 105.9 The App. I want to get to hockey here for a second as we tape this for the Mark Madden podcast. The Penguins are getting ready to host Toronto. When the Penguins were down to three defensemen in Toronto, when the Penguins won at the Maple Leafs, and Letang just stayed out there for a while, double shifted, I think even triple shifted once, was out there for about 90 seconds or 100 at one clip. It got me thinking, what hockey player could play a ton of minutes historically? And here's my top three workhorses in hockey. Number one is Doug Harvey. Played defense for Montreal from 1947 through 1961. No, I never saw him play. He won six Stanley Cups with Montreal. He won seven Norris trophies as best defenseman in a row. He is one of the all-time great defensemen. And if you watch old Stanley Cup highlight films, they're on sometimes in the offseason, late night on the NHL Network, highlights from the Stanley Cup final of each year. If you watch those from the late 50s when Montreal won five in a row, Doug Harvey is out there all the time. Number two, you watch. You can't help but notice they didn't keep minutes played back then. If they did, Doug Harvey's minutes played might have been all the time. Number two, Chris Letang of the Penguins. The more he plays, he really does play better, and he still does it at 35. Tanger is an absolute freak of conditioning. And number three, a former Penguin, member of the Hockey Hall of Fame now, Sergei Zubov, played 1 year for the Penguins, 1995-96. Mario didn't like him, so he got traded for Kevin Hatcher. Bad deal there. The Penguins beat Washington in a four-overtime game in the playoffs in 1996. Peter Nedved scored to win it for the Penguins. And Zubov played 82 minutes. That's an informal count. Minutes weren't yet officially kept, but those who have watched the video have timed him at approximately 82 minutes. It was amazing. Zubov just stayed out there and then stayed out there some more. And then afterwards, he smoked two cigarettes at once in the shower. So much for the tobacco industry being maligned for negative effects on athletes and people in general. Zubov had a super hot wife, too. Arguably the hottest Penguin wife ever. Now, just off the list is Alexei Kovalev, formerly of the Penguins. When he was with the Rangers under the notoriously hard-nosed coach Mike Keenan, Keenan would get mad because Kovey wouldn't come off the rink, you know, the prescribed shift length. Like, what are they usually, 25, 30 seconds, somewhere in there? So he wouldn't let Kovey come off. He thought he'd, like, embarrass Kovey, exhaust Kovey by just telling him to go back out there, not letting him get on the bench. So Kovey played, I don't know, like 7 or 8 minutes straight, didn't mind, wasn't exhausted, played pretty good, none the worse for wear. So I don't think maybe Kovey should be, well, I don't know who I'd replace to put Kovey on. I mean, Doug Harvey, Chris Letang, Sergei Zubov. I mean, Zuby with the 82 minutes in one game, and he played great. I mean, yikes. That is all there is. There ain't no more for the Hockey Night Show. I'm Mark Madden. Stay tuned for the Penguins Network pregame here at 105.9 The X.